The WNBA determined their champion last night when Simone Augustus led the Minnesota Lynx to a 73-67 triumph over the Atlanta Dream, completing a three-game sweep. The news in the NBA was not so cheerful. The league, which locked out the players months ago, has already canceled its preseason. Earlier this week, Commissioner David Stern announced that the regular season would be shortened if a deal was not in place by Monday. And last night, multiple sources were reporting that there would be no Monday meeting between the players and the owners. Joining me now to discuss the negotiations, or lack of same, is Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Chris, welcome back to Only a Game.
Good to be here.
For our listeners who have unaccountably not been following labor management negotiations in the NBA day to day, give us a brief summary of the key issues.
The most significant issue is the split of the basketball-related income. Now, to put it into context, in the last collective bargaining agreement, the players received 57% of all basketball-related income. This time around, the owner's opening offer was to cut that all the way down to 43%. They have since come up to a even 50-50 split, but the players have said that that's simply too low for them to go. If you want to look at it this way, each percentage point they come down essentially means giving $40 million back to the owners. And you play that out over a 6 or 7 year agreement, and you're talking about potentially more than $1 billion that they'll be handing back to the owners if you come all the way down to 50-50. So right now, we're at kind of a classic impasse. They last met on Tuesday. It did not appear to end very well. And as you said, David Stern said that on Monday, if we don't have an agreement, we're going to wipe out the first 2 weeks of the regular season. And from there, it's just going to only get worse.
For the sake of clarity, have the two sides been able to agree on what basketball-related income, a.k.a. BRI, actually is?
Well, no, they haven't, because the NBA has sort of redefined what BRI is, and in doing so, they've created $350 million worth of expenses that they're essentially shaving off the top before they make that 50-50 split. Now, the one wrinkle to all this, and the most relevant wrinkle, I think, is that the NBA is saying now, in their latest proposal slash offer slash whatever you want to call it, is that they will give them a 50-50 split of the BRI definition as it was previously constituted in the last collective bargaining agreement.
Chris, there have been reports that the NBA's star players are willing to take a harder line than the role players, who make up a majority of the union and typically make much less money. How does that affect the union's stance at the bargaining table?
Well, it factors in considerably, because there's a lot of internal strife, I think, at the NBA Players Association right now, because you said it. I've been reporting a lot of that as well with a lot of role players, guys that are the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th guys on teams' benches who generally make less than $3 million per year, saying, well, you know, to us, a 50-50 split sounds pretty fair. Now, on Wednesday, Billy Hunter and Derek Fisher released a letter to the players' rank and file, essentially outlining why they believed a 50-50 split was unfair. But I'll tell you this, there are a lot of players that simply don't buy it. And these are players that, even though they've made a considerable amount of money for most of us in their careers, they have not saved well. And they're not, I don't think they're prepared to go into a potential season where they would lose a chunk of games or lose an entire season altogether.
The NBA has fewer players than the other three major sports in the U.S., so the players' union is by far the smallest, about 400 members. Does that create a different dynamic among NBA players than, say, the members of the NFL Players Association?
I don't think so, because I think when you talk about the NFL and the NBA, it's kind of apples and oranges, because the NFL was making tons of money. Everybody knew they were making tons of money. It was the owner's goal in that league to make even more money. So they weren't necessarily making concessions, as big a concessions, I think, as the players in the NBA are being asked to make. Now, the NBA has done a fantastic job of winning the PR battle throughout this whole process. I mean, their statement that 22 out of 30 teams are losing money has essentially become a verifiable fact that is being run on radio stations and newspapers and magazines on the internet worldwide, when in reality it's something that the Player Association hotly disputes.
Do you have a sense of whether the league is right or the players are right?
The players acknowledge that they have to give something back. And I think that owners should accept some responsibility for the bad decisions that they have made. You know, a lot of owners out there, for lack of a better phrase, they want to make the next system idiot-proof. You know, they want to make sure that they can go out there and spend as much money as they want and give away as many bad contracts as they have to, and then have the collective bargaining agreement save them from themselves. You know, a guy like Rashard Lewis, who a few years ago was signed to a six-year or seven-year, I'm sorry, $118 million contract. You know, he didn't put a gun to the owner's head and say, sign me to that deal. What's he supposed to say when an owner comes to him and says, here's $118 million? He's not expected to say no. So I think the players are correct in the sense that they have to, you know, the owners have to be responsible for this.
Failure of management and labor to agree resulted in a 50-game schedule during the 1998-1999 season. If a deal isn't reached by Monday and the league eventually ends up playing another partial season, what kind of effects would you expect that to have on the NBA?
I think most significantly it will have an effect on attendance. I mean, we saw that in 1998. In 99, when the season actually started, the fans were insulted, and rightfully so, and were turned off by the greediness of what they consider a battle between billionaires and millionaires. The league is coming off arguably its most successful season in decades, and really since the Michael Jordan, the heyday of the Michael Jordan era. I mean, ratings were through the roof. Attendance nationally was up a little bit. Everything is sort of spinning in a positive direction, and I think if the owners can just start to make a little bit more money, I think everything would work out.
Chris, I'm going to close with a two-part question. Will the NBA play a full 82-game season? And if a deal is reached so that that season can go forward, what's it going to look like?
I think no, the NBA will not play a full 82-game season. I do think the NBA will go ahead and cancel the first 2 weeks of the regular season. The two sides will come back to the table. They'll hammer out some kind of agreement, and I think that agreement will look a lot like the final offer the NBA put on the table right now, where you have a 50-50 split with the basketball-related income definition being what it was the last time around. Yeah, I'm sort of oversimplifying what this negotiations look like, but that's the biggest thing that these two sides have to agree on, and I think they will agree on it in mid-November, late November, on the NBA's terms.
Chris Mannix covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated. To get his updates on the lockout and negotiations, you can follow him on Twitter at ChrisMannixSI. Chris, thank you very much for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
It's 19 minutes past the hour. Fans of baseball or football have had their ashes scattered over or buried under the fields where their favorite teams have played. The ashes of people who've loved sailing have been cast upon the waters over which they once sailed. Now hunters, too, can carry their passion for a sporting activity of sorts beyond the veil. Two game wardens in Alabama are turning cremated ashes into ammunition, which can be fired at deer, birds, or pesky critters. Of Holy Smoke, the company he helped establish, Thad Holmes says, "It's about celebrating life. For those who are comfortable around guns, it's not weird at all." Jump the gun.